All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are talking about the 14 players that make up the Falcons practice squad, as well as answering your listener questions.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a Monday mailbag episode in which I will be answering many of your listener questions. Some of them are some pop culture stuff. A lot of it's roster stuff, positions and players that the Falcons should and could wind up adding that you guys asked me over the weekend. And a lot of these questions came in before Sunday when the Falcons officially established their practice squad. But that will sort of be our lead story for today, talking about the 14, possibly 15 players that the Falcons added, the two quarterbacks that the Falcons added. We'll sort of then look back and revisit sort of my roster predictions before we jump into those questions and sort of talk a little bit about the makeup of the Falcons roster to a certain extent. So without further ado, let's sort of jump in to that Locked On Falcons lead story, talking about the brand new Falcons practice squad. So the Falcons made 14 official additions to their 16-man practice squad on Sunday, leaving two spots available. The 14 players included 12 that were with the Falcons this summer during training camp, including quarterbacks Kurt Benkert and Kyle Aletta, wide receivers Juwan Green and Chris Rowland, tight end Jared Pinkney, offensive lineman Sean Harlow, defensive end Austin Edwards, linebacker Edmund Robinson, cornerbacks Delrick Abrams, Tyler Hall, and Josh Hawkins, and safety Jamal Carter. Then on Sunday, the Falcons put a waiver claim on ex-Washington football team offensive tackle Timon Paris, clearing a roster space for Paris by cutting offensive tackle John Wetzel and then putting him on the Falcons practice squad to give them 13 players from this past summer's camp. The only player the Falcons signed to their practice squad that was not in camp this year was punter Cameron Nizalek, who the team did actually work out last weekend. There is the potential for a 15th member for the Falcons practice squad, but the Falcons have not officially announced that move as of Sunday evening. Tom Pelissero of NFL Network reported that the Falcons were planning on signing ex-Cleveland Browns guard Willie Wright to their practice squad. Wright spent 2019 on the Browns practice squad after being an undrafted free agent out of Tulsa that year, but that's not necessarily guaranteed that Wright is joining the Falcons. Some of you may recall back in 2015, after final cuts were made, initial reports indicated the Falcons were planning on signing then free agent running back Mike Gilsley to their practice squad, but that never came to fruition. Gilsley wound up in Buffalo, became a productive role player for them as well as the New England Patriots over the next couple of years. So until the Falcons officially announce the addition of Wright, there are two spots that remain open on their practice squad, and it seems likely that those players will be veteran players that have been with other teams over this past summer. There is also the possibility that maybe one or two players currently on the Falcons' 53-man roster might fill one or two of those remaining spots, including defensive end Jacob Tuohy-Mariner, who seemingly made the Falcons' 53-man roster to fill the void left by veteran defensive end Steven Means, who's currently on the team's reserve COVID-19. Should Means clear COVID and return to the Falcons roster within the next few days, it's likely that the Falcons will try to stash Tuohy-Mariner on the team's practice squad. Given testing protocols implemented by the NFL this summer surrounding COVID-19, basically means that it would take 2 to 3 days from when a team visits or works out a player until they can officially sign them to their roster, makes it likely that those last one or two spots on the practice squad may take a few days for the Falcons to fill should they decide to bring in outside help. One thing that does stand out about the Falcons practice squad additions is the decision to keep two quarterbacks in Benkert and Laletta, in addition to the two quarterbacks already on the roster and starter Matt Ryan and backup Matt Schaub. The Falcons are among 11 teams currently in the NFL as of Sunday evening that between their roster and practice squad are expected to carry at least four quarterbacks on their team entering this season, with teams like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New York Jets reportedly expected to carry five quarterbacks, including three on the roster and two on their practice squad. Normally, NFL teams carry two quarterbacks on their roster and a third on their practice squad, something the Falcons have regularly done since 2012, which was the last time the team entered a season with three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster. But indications are that the Falcons are carrying that fourth quarterback in Laletta due to the concerns about the potential impact of COVID-19 on one or more of their quarterbacks in Ryan and Schaub, and thus being considered a preemptive measure to prevent them from scrambling to find a third option at quarterback, given the longer turnaround due to the aforementioned testing protocols during midseason. It also could indicate that the team is not completely thrilled with Kurt Benkert's development now that he's finished his third summer with the Falcons, after there were some reports indicating that he was pretty up and down in this past year's camp. Given that Schaub is entering the final year of his contract at the age of 39, adding a fourth passer like Laletta gives the Falcons an alternative option to turn to if they do seek to replace the 16-year veteran in Schaub next offseason. So there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, guys, and we'll talk a bit more about the surprise cuts and the addition of Timon Paris coming up before we get into the Q&A portion of today's show. But before recording this podcast, I went on NFL Game Pass because I wanted to check out Paris's performance from a game he had against the Atlanta Falcons in the 2019 preseason, and I was able to find said game and check out Paris. And if you wanted to see what the newest Falcons offensive lineman looked like in that game, you can too by seeing full game replays of not only the Falcons, but the Washington football team and their preseason games over the last two summers. You can even speed through and watch the condensed version of those games, which is basically a 45-minute version of the games that allows you to see every snap. You can also revisit Craig Reynolds, another ex-Washington player that recently has been with the Falcons, or revisit all the great throws from Dwayne Haskins to Kelvin Harmon in that particular game. Or maybe you just want to watch Falcon players, which is cool too. Not only you can watch full games, condensed versions, as well as the coaches' film in the All-22, you also get access to 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes that get inside the perspectives of NFL players like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Davante Adams, and many more. You can get all of that by going to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. So the Falcons picked up Paris, who graded out pretty well as a run blocker versus the Falcons last summer in that preseason dress rehearsal game against Washington. He's a good athlete, had some success pushing around guys like Jacob Tuohy-Mariner a bunch on some down blocks. When I went back and watched that game, looks a little bit more limited in pass protection based off of what I saw in that game, but he's a good enough athlete and technician that I think, especially with further development, he can be able to get by there. Willie Wright, on the other hand, should he wind up being added? All I know is that his Pro Football Focus grades last summer as a rookie were not great, but he's also a pretty good athlete. He tested in the 80th and 90th percentiles at his pro day last year in 2019 in speed and jumps, and was like in the 50th and 70th percentile in the agility drills. Not a particularly big guy, like 6'3", 300 pounds, but has long arms for a guy given his shorter stature. He played exclusively left guard for the Browns last summer. Paris, by the way, over the two summers he was with Washington, played exclusively right tackle for them and was originally an undrafted free agent out of Stony Brook in 2018. So turning our page from those guys to the cuts that the Falcons made, no real surprises there. If you're, you know, if you're curious how accurate my roster prediction from last week was, I got about 49 out of 53 right, in factoring as well the Wetzel move. That number would have been higher if I had made my official prediction and updated it for this past week. And that would have included having Steven Means not making the team because of his being on the COVID list, and probably would have wound up replacing him with Jacob Tuohy-Mariner. The other two that I got wrong, in addition to Wetzel and Means, was Chris Cooper. I had as the fifth safety over Sherrod Neesman, but you know, if I'm being honest, that was more of me being pessimistic that the Falcons would cut Neesman just to spite me, given my vocal support of Neesman over the last 3 years on this podcast and on various other platforms. And then the other player that I missed on was I had Chris Rowland making the team as the team's punt returner over Brandon Powell, largely due to the injury that Power had earlier this summer, which I thought basically, oh, well, you know, roughly the week that I think he wound up missing practice, I was like, oh, that's pretty much going to kill his chances of beating out Roland, which I was wrong on. So I would probably say of the Falcons 53-man roster, Brandon Powell is the biggest surprise. I think I wound up having 6 out of 6 correct on the Falcons practice squad. So with that being said, let's sort of roll into the Q&A portion of today's episode. And that gets us to a question from Jerry Walker at jwalker888 80-12. He asks, seeing as how most NFL teams are make few transactions depending on who hits the waiver wire, which players need to put their champagne on ice until Tuesday? Since we already know that one of those answers is John Wetzel, had I told you before the waiver claims on Sunday, if I had recorded this episode, you know, the day before, I would have basically ranked the bottom five guys on the roster, number 49, Nisman, in terms of the guys that are least safe of making it to opening day on the team. 49, Nisman, 50, John Wetzel, 51, Dejan Sinnott, 52, Jacob Tuohy Mariner, and 53, Brandon Powell. So those were the guys that I was probably least keen or least confident that they would stick and probably would be potentially the first guys to go if the Falcons decide to bring in new guys. So our next question comes from One Flew Over the Falcons Nest at Mave2124 on Twitter. Can you please shed light on Vic Beasley not yet passing a physical? What is the Titans play exactly? Well, since Andy, Mave2124, asked this question, the Titans, I believe, did put Vic Beasley on the roster. So that was basically their play. I know you asked that before it occurred, but beyond that, I don't really have any insight into that. You know, Chad Van Horn at Chad Van Horn 77 asks, so after the cuts, how much cap space do we have this year? What players are still in free agency that we could afford and make sense to possibly sign? You know, overthecap.com has us at $7.8 million under this year's cap. I've always assumed Cameron Wake would be potentially able to sign on like a 1 year, $4 to $6 million deal. I don't know that for a fact, but that's sort of the number that I've always had in my head all off season long. So, you know, I feel like we have enough money to grab him potentially and be able to restructure some contracts to create even additional space heading into the season. Let's move on to the dude at Dude Orders. He asks, I want you to admit we need Sanu. No, I will not admit that because we don't need Sanu. I'm sorry to disappoint you, dude. Normally this would be a chance for me to go on an 8-minute rant about this, but I'll skip that for today. I think the Falcons have plenty of chain movers in Julio and Ridley and Hurst and Engage potentially if he can improve on that area. What the Falcons lack are dynamic explosive weapons. Sanu is not going to help that and solve that problem. You know, what the Falcons currently lack is they don't have a true backup to Julio Jones. Their top backup to Julio Jones, if Julio Jones misses a game, is Christian Blake. And Christian Blake to me is not an X wide receiver. He can function there, but that's not really what he's ideally suited for. He's more ideally suited to be a Y or a Z. And Sanu is not an X either. He's also suited to be a Y or a Z. So what the Falcons need is an X receiver that can get vertical. That's what they need. Sanu doesn't fill that problem. So we will continue to answer today's questions. And, you know, on the note of the previous question I answered, you know, in terms of signing Cameron Wake being a great deal and adding a all new flavor for the Falcons pass rush, you know who else could give you a great deal and bring brand new flavors? Of course, Built Bar. Built Bars are low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, perfect for keto diets and anybody who's health conscious that wants to lose or maintain weight and doesn't want to sacrifice flavor, because all Built Bars are protein bars that have 100% real chocolate in them. And Built Bar now has 6 new flavors. I've always been a big fan of the coconut almond and peanut butter flavor, but I'm hoping to add caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and Alpen Almond Crisp to my rotation. Like you can add a brand new pass rusher to your rotation. All you have to do is head over to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. And if you've already used that promo code before, you can use it again. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So our next question comes from Nacho F at Nacho_ATL, he has two questions. Which position are you most concerned about entering the season based on depth and talent? I'm still worried about the offensive line, especially McGarry. I'm not sure he's trustworthy yet. And his second question is, would you claim cornerback Sidney Jones? So to answer your first question, you know, my answer about what I'm most concerned about is the same thing I've been saying for months. It's the pass rush. Not saying that I think that's the weakest group of the team or anything like that. I think is you can arguably make the strength of the pass rush is the strongest part of the Falcons defense. But to me, it's going to be potentially the thing that drives the bus for this defense to have consistency and success this upcoming season. So that continues to be the area of the team, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball, that concerns me the most. But to be honest with you, I'm not overly concerned about really any aspect of the Falcons roster, which I know is counter to what you think I say, given all the criticism and nitpicking I've done about the Falcons roster and their talent level over this offseason. But it's never because I think the Falcons lack talent. It's just that when I hear people say things like, oh, they're so talented, or this is one of the most talented teams that we've ever seen for the Falcons, I think there are empty accolades. And I think it's something that people say because it sounds good, not because it's particularly a meaningful statement to say, even if it was true. And that's why I tend to push back against it. I don't think it's true. But at the same time, even if it was true, it doesn't mean anything, because talent isn't, you don't just simply get off the bus with all your talent and win football games. It's a lot more complicated than that, evidenced by the fact that despite all the talent that the Falcons have had over the last couple of years, they've gone 7-9 both years. So, you know, I feel like with all the talent that the Falcons have, they could have a lot more talent had they been a lot smarter with their money this offseason and with free agent signings or find ways to trade back into the draft to get more picks on day three. They could have been more talented. So that's been why I've been arguing and criticizing them as far as that concerned. But for the most part, I'm fine with the roster. There are no glaring holes that I think you're going to sit here and be able to solve, you know, 5 days, or as you guys are listening to this, 6 days before week one. You know, like, it's just like, you've made this bed, now you got to lie in it. And, you know, it could wind up working out in the favor. They certainly are capable of being a much better team, but we'll see if they wind up living up to that. As for Sidney Jones, you know, I wouldn't be necessarily that in favor of signing him. You know, I don't think the Falcons really need more quote unquote talented, unproven corners. I don't think the Falcons need any more reclamation projects. They already have a bunch of young cornerbacks. I mean, really, the biggest reclamation project they have already at cornerback is Isaiah Oliver, because they got to figure out if Isaiah Oliver is a viable starter or he's going to be a quote unquote second round bust. That's really what we need to figure out. And, you know, Sidney Jones, I don't think is going to help you in that regard. You're going to have some opportunities if you wind up finding out, whether it's Oliver, Terrell, Jordan Miller, Kendall Sheffield, whatever you wind up discovering about those guys, if you need to add more talent at the cornerback position, you'll have plenty of opportunities next offseason to add that talent. And probably at that point in time, you're probably not looking for another young, up-and-coming, again, reclamation project that's a talented player that's been cast off from another team. You're probably looking for more steady veteran presences than necessarily, or at least some elite cornerback prospects, like, you know, another first round top 15 type of caliber talent, more so than, you know, another sort of potential reclamation project, like you already have a bunch of those guys on the team already. Too many guys, if you ask me, if you ask. So our next question comes from Ricky Ricardo at RJ's Martin Life. He asks two questions. Who are the three non-Falcon players who got cut that you would like to see the Falcons sign to their roster / practice squad? And number two, how are you feeling about your beloved Pitt this year? To be honest with you, I don't necessarily have strong opinions on your first question in terms, because we didn't watch preseason. And, you know, I like to base my opinions off of how guys perform on the field. And while I could certainly sit here and list players that in previous preseason or previous seasons were intriguing talents to me, not being able to see where those guys currently are in the development based off of their play this past summer makes me a lot more lukewarm. And, you know, so really adding more talent this summer, I don't know, is really, you just kind of have to ride with, you know, again, you made your bed, you got to dance with the girl who brought you, the guy who brought you, whatever you want to call it. And see what happens, and hopefully get a much more normal offseason next year. But given how college football is going to be, going to your next question, you're not really going to get a normal offseason, but more normal than in the past. In terms of how I feel about Pitt, I didn't watch any Pitt football last year. It's been probably 3 years since I watched Pitt basketball. But now that we have some legit NFL talent this year, I do plan on watching a little bit more. So I will watch more Pitt football this year. Mantis DeBach and MD at Sebastian Dad asks, have you watched The Boys or Doom Patrol? If so, what's your thoughts? I've never seen Doom Patrol. I did watch season one of The Boys a couple of months ago. I wasn't necessarily in love with it, but it certainly was good. I'd say it was good. And certainly I was curious to see what would happen in season two. But be honest with you, I'm not sort of like gung ho on The Boys that I'm going to, like, I know it came out this week, past weekend on Amazon Prime, but I'll probably get to it several weeks and or months from now. So probably by November, I will probably have seen the entire season, but we'll see on that point. Justin Sandu at Justin 2012-24. Do you think JTM will get cut when Means clears protocols? Seems pretty likely. What else? Colin Nelson at CCN72 asks, what three guys from last year most need to improve for the Falcons to have a good season? I'll give you five. Tack, Keith Smith, Kayla McGarry, Isaiah Oliver, and DeMonte Casey. Harold H. Norman III at Advor Reason. If this ends up being the last season of DQ and Dimitroff, what would collateral damage look like? Are we wiping the board, or are we pieces away still? Well, it's a mix of both. But if we're getting a new regime, as you often see in the case in the NFL, tendency is that you get a very high roster turnover. I think I saw a tweet this weekend that say Carolina wound up replacing 50% of their roster from last year to this year under Matt Rhule based off of their final cuts. I believe that the Falcons had a similar turnover in Dan Quinn's first year from 2014 to 2015 with 50% roster turnover. I think you would experience a relatively high rate of turnover under a new regime next year. But it would probably be mostly back in roster guys. It would probably be a lot of the second and third string guys currently on the team would not be on the team next year with under a new regime. I do think you would see more starters go on the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball. Cause I think, you know, the Falcons offensive core is stronger than their defensive core currently. And my guess contributing to that is my expectations that Arthur Blank would probably also hire an offensive minded coach with the idea that that guy needs to get this current offensive personnel, the Matt Ryan, the Julio Jones, the Calvin Ridley's, and these young offensive linemen, Hayden Hurst, et cetera, back on track and performing up to the level that they're capable of performing. And I don't think you would have sort of that same thought process with the defense. So, you know, like when I look at the 12 starters on offense, in factoring the number three wide receiver as a 12th starter, you know, I would say probably at most you're lose like three of those guys between now and next year, next September. I would say on defense, though, you could probably lose like seven of the 12 starters on that side of the ball between now and over the next 12 months. And then, you know, the current 13 current backups, you know, I would probably say only three of those guys currently are strong locks or and or guarantees to be on the Falcons roster 12 months from now. So that's what we're talking about with the potential. Not saying that that's likely to happen, but I do think there is certainly some potential where you would see the back end of this team's roster on both sides of the ball, but less so in terms of the starters on offense, you know, get churned and changed over. So our next question comes from ClemDB at ClemFreeCo. He asks, you can have one single superpower from any Marvel character. What would it be? You know, I've always thought the powers of Bishop from X-Men and Sebastian Shaw from X-Men. I've always been an X-Men guy. They had the sort of those energy absorption and redirection powers were always pretty cool powers. And, you know, those powers are passive enough that I could live a relatively normal life if I had them and not necessarily, you know, like, if you're invisible or you can regenerate or you can fly or have super strength, like those would be hard powers to have to adapt to in your daily life, you know? But you know, if I was sitting here saying like, you know, you could actually grant me the wish of like one power and something that could actually do some good in the world, I would say like, oh, like molecular manipulation, right? Being able to take like all the CO2 atoms in the air and the oceans and being able to split them without creating some nuclear explosion or chain reaction that kills all life on the planet. But being able to sort of separate the CO2, turn it into carbon, turn it into oxygen, which would basically end not all of the CO2, because there has to be like 0.4% of the air is naturally CO2. But, you know, like all the other stuff, split that and single-handedly end the climate crisis, thus saving the world. So I that would probably be my answer. Our next question comes from Mr. Height CEO at Height Trent on Twitter. He says, why Schaub over Bankert? Familiarity? What's funny about this, guys, is this is literally like the third time I've recorded the answer to this, because both times I've wound up thinking I was going to give like a 5-minute answer to close out the show and wound up ranting for 10 to 15 plus minutes about why Matt Schaub gets so much hate from his own fan base, which is ironic because that's basically what people say about Matt Ryan and how he's disrespected or whatever. Basically, I will sit here and say is this. The simple answer without going too deeply into it. Matt Schaub and Kurt Benkert have never been competing for the same job. Matt Schaub is light years better a quarterback than Kurt Benkert. This is not me hating on Kurt Benkert, but he's a very streaky, inconsistent quarterback. And his highs, you know, you can get away with that as a number two quarterback in the NFL if you're Jameis Winston and your A game makes you a top 10 quarterback. But when you're Kurt Benkert and your A game, you know, is making you, I don't even know, like Nick Mullins or something like that. Like, that's not what we're talking about as a guy that's ideally coveted as a number two quarterback in the league, when particularly when you compare him to a player like Matt Schaub, who has consistently, whether we're talking about Matt Schaub behind Michael Vick or Matt Schaub now behind Matt Ryan, has been one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL. And even when you talk about Matt Schaub and his performance as a starter in Houston for six seasons, was one of the better quarterback starting quarterbacks in the NFL, went to multiple Pro Bowls, won the majority of his starts, led the Texans to multiple playoff berths, all those sort of things, but he doesn't get the credit for reasons. And again, I think a big reason why, and this, again, I'm not going to go too deep into it, but I think a big reason why Kurt Benkert is so beloved has nothing to do with football, right? It has to do with like how he is off the field, particularly with social media and how he interacts with fans. Like when you look at how distraught fans were when he got cut and how joyous fans were when he was brought back on the practice squad, that 24-hour period, you know, again, my opinions on players are based off of how they perform on the field. That's, I don't really care about social media stuff. I've talked about this in the past with Tack McKinley. Again, I think this is a big reason why Mohamed Sanu was so popular, is because his social media game was on point for that first year he was here in Atlanta, but the player on the field was kind of meh, right? And I kind of think that with Kurt Benkert, and I know people are going to hear this and think I'm hating on Kurt Benkert. Again, I like the player. I root for the guy. I'm looking forward to him getting another opportunity to be a much more consistent player next summer, but Kurt Benkert's never been in competition with Matt Schaub. That's the end of it. That's what I'll say. I'll leave it at that. I could go on for another 15 minutes on this subject and break it down piece by piece. And maybe we'll do that on a future episode, you know, January or something like that, but like probably not anytime soon. So that's where I'll leave it, guys. Kurt Benkert, Matt Schaub over Kurt Benkert, because he's a much better quarterback and it's not even a conversation. It's never been a conversation, and maybe it will be a conversation next year, but probably next year Matt Schaub will be gone. So if you guys, that's where I'll leave it. If you guys want to send in more questions for me in the future, you can do so on Twitter at Lockdown Falcons. You can do so on Facebook at Lockdown Falcons. You can send an email to lockdownfalcons@mail.com. We're going to have a Locked On Seahawks crossover later this week. You will have an opportunity to get further questions answered later on an episode. We'll probably wrap up the week with a Q&A to wrap up the week, but probably on tomorrow's episode, unless there's other pressing news that we need to discuss, we will probably start to pivot towards this week one matchup and get into that, you know, piggybacking on a Q&A question that we had earlier this summer, where I went into sort of the broad strokes, and we'll start to get into the Seahawks matchup on tomorrow's episode. So there you guys have it. I'm done. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.